Welcome back to the land of the purple.
Welcome.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State Athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State Nation, what is going on? Trying to survive this windstorm, recording on March 29th, 2022, on this Tuesday night, the Purple Project Podcast. All about the latest in what's going on in Kansas State Athletics here in Manhattan, Kansas, which your host lives in. Eddie Greer here, checking in once again for the Purple Project Podcast. This is episode 94 of the Purple Project Podcast, folks, where we talk Wildcat sports. Before I bring on my co-host, usually for the weekly podcast, obviously, the Purple Project Podcast, you can find it wherever you get your podcast, whether it's from Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Audioboom, and a couple more podcasting platforms out there. The countdown is officially on, folks. We're on 94, sick after this week, folks. Of course, this episode will be out on Friday as the usual time, going into the first weekend of April. So when this comes out, April will be upon us already in 2022. Yeah, that's right. Six away from 100. And on that note, time to bring on my co-host, as usual, here on the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition, who lives out there in San Diego, none other than Alex Aiden. Alex, what's happening out there?
Not too much, Eddie. Just kind of a slow Tuesday out here. Actually, just turned on my laptop here, the K-State Northern Colorado baseball game on ESPN Plus. So I'm watching it live. And by the way, I think Northern Colorado just committed their fifth error of the game just now, because they just threw a routine ground ball past the first baseman into the dugout. And they're putting errors left and right in that game. You were just saying to me right before I turned this on too, like, I think they've committed like four errors in this game. I turn it on, the first play I see is just freaking windmill throw. You mentioned the weather is a little dicey out there today. I don't know what it is. You guys must have gotten what we had yesterday, because it was rainy and stormy here yesterday, and then it's rainy and stormy this evening in the Manhattan and Kansas City area. So I'm not sure what blew through, but it seems to have moved up that direction. I'll tell you, we talked a little bit on our podcast last week with Reggie Stubblefield about some restaurants and some different establishments in the Manhattan area. And so my parents, they were up in Manhattan this past weekend for a wedding that they were going to, and they were staying at the Blue Mont Hotel there in Manhattan, and they went to Goldsby's, Denzel Goldsby's restaurant there.
Yeah,
first floor of the Blue Mont. And they really liked it. They really liked it, and good reviews. So good reviews on Goldsby's. So I know we were talking about that last week in the podcast. So anyone who wants to go check it out, yes, I've now got a confirmed source that says it's a good spot. You know, a good spot to have a good time. Obviously, you got your beer on tap there on the wall. You can do your interactive sports games. You can do your bowling. You can obviously order your food. And just a good time there. Anybody who remembers my time at K-State, my go-to restaurant was Harry's. I freaking loved Harry's. And Harry's doesn't even exist anymore.
Yeah, it closed down.
A million pieces.
Closed down.
It's the most depressing thing in the world, because Harry's was my go-to staple in Manhattan. So that was my food. That was definitely my food establishment. I know Reggie didn't really have any answers, but I want to provide you some, Eddie. I didn't really have enough time to provide you answers, but I wanted to provide you my own, even though you didn't ask. So
Sure, go ahead.
Go to. Went to Bourbon and Baker. You really can't go wrong with Bourbon and Baker either.
No,
you know?
No, you cannot.
Yeah, you know, it's always that's always a good one. Which, by the way, same people who owned Harry's owned Bourbon and Baker. In fact, I think they're the same chef. I think they both have the exact same executive chef, I recall as well. So that's another good spot for anybody who's thinking about hitting the Manhattan area. And then Four Olives. Four Olives is a restaurant that I went to a couple times there that was really good. So those are like maybe some areas. Well, at least Harry's and Four Olives. If you want to spend a little more, if you want to like go into Aggieville and get like the good Aggieville food. I did mention this one last week. Taco Lucha, forget it. Man.
You did. Like, we did. Yep, we did. Yep.
Let's go. Like buckle up. Let's go, man. Taco Lucha all day long. I'll do Taco Lucha. Believe it or not, Kites actually has some pretty good wings. So you kind of would surprise you, but they actually have some pretty good wings there.
I think I tried some of those. The last time was in Kites.
Yeah, Kites actually has some good wings. They really do. They really do got some good wings. And then, back when Hibachi was down in Aggieville, that was a good spot. I know they were in Aggieville, and I think they moved downtown. And then I don't even know if Hibachi's open now or not, but either way, that was a spot that used to be a good spot, too, down in Aggieville. There's actually some, like I said, there's some good spots. And then there's a spot right next to Taco Lucha that I'm blanking on the name of that's good, too. I can't remember the name of it, but there you go. So I clearly am hungry because I'm talking about food and restaurants, but I just wanted to give the update on Goldsby's. We now have an official source that says good spot to hang out, have a good time. So Eddie will go test it out for us here. and then he'll report back, and we'll see if we have a second source. I'm on that, but you know what? Keep an eye out, man. Reggie said he can cook. We'll see him. You know, maybe he'll come back and he'll open his own establishment in Manhattan. We can get some southern cooking up there in Manhattan.
Oh yeah, that's for sure. Yes, and that's what my co-host Alex is referring to. Yeah, it's been kind of a while since it's been me and you kind of on the podcast here. We've especially hit up a couple of our special guests, obviously. With Curtis Kelly and Reggie Stubblefield. Of course, Alex mentioned Reggie Stubblefield. That episode is out on the archives. You can find it. If you have not downloaded it, definitely a must listen along Curtis Kelly as well. And then, of course, going back to Keaton Valentine as well. We will have him back on the podcast shortly. I don't know when. I'm trying to find a perfect fitting for his next appearance on Triple P. So definitely he'll be back as well. Curtis Kelly, he said he wants to be back as well. And so is Reggie Stubblefield. So something in common there, Alex. All those guests want to come back on. That definitely tells the content that we've been coming out with as of late. Yeah.
Curtis Kelly said he's gonna put in a good word. See if Shane wants to come on. You know, get Shane Southall on here. To talk. That would be a good interview too. Although I don't believe he's part of the staff anymore, but he would be a good interview as well. But you're right, we've kind of been on a roll with interviews. We've had a lot of them lately, a lot of good interviews and a lot of good content, and so that is the good stuff. So yeah, you may not get as many hot takes from us when we got the interviews on, but you're getting some really good unique contact from the inside, and there's nothing better than hearing from those from the inside.
Yeah, and I got something cooking, hopefully. Yeah, since I didn't really have time, well, obviously I planned on us just an Eddie and Alex episode to normal back to regular scheduled programming this week, but I might have something in the works here. I have to reach out before I go out of town, obviously, to Kansas City. And speaking of restaurants, I haven't said anything yet, so we might as well just stay on this for a little bit. At some point, yeah, I'm going to try out Goosby's, and I will let the audience and you know how it tastes once I get a chance to go over there. Obviously, Taco Lucha is definitely up there on the list. I'm also blanking on, it's a burger joint that it's next to Taco Lucha. I cannot think of the name either. It's slipping my mind. Kites, yep, the Kites is pretty good. Wings, I tried it. That's the last time I was in Kites. I tried their wings. Pretty damn good.
They got good wings.
Yeah, pretty good. What I was going to say. Also, Tallgrass Tap House, pretty good. And I've been in a Bourbon Baker as well. Harry's, I was in there. I tried their lunch specials, which was pretty damn good.
Yeah.
As well, I was definitely sad when they closed down not too long ago as well. So yeah, and also I'll throw in El Patron as well, the Mexican restaurant, pretty good Mexican food. There's a lot of Mexican food restaurants in Manhattan area. If you're a visitor or you're a current student, obviously, the adult, quote unquote adult Aggieville, El Patron, right up next to the mall up there on Point. So,
you know, Eddie, you mentioned So Long Saloon.
There it is. Yeah, I knew it. I knew it. Yeah,
that's what it was. Okay, that's it. No, you mentioned bluegrass. That's obvious. That's a good one. That's a good staple. But I'll tell you, with Taco Lucha, well, my favorite thing, and it seemed like it was kind of a love it or hate it thing for people in Manhattan. Some loved it, some hated it, but I just loved their Chipotle raspberry black bean dip. Just freaking loved it. Oh my gosh, I got it every time. I got it to go sometimes. Do you remember where I lived, Eddie, when I was in Manhattan? I was right off of like 10th and Laramie, like in that area. So I mean, I lived right by Aggieville. So it was just so close. You know, I could just like, you know, walk right down there and get it. And so sometimes I do that. Sometimes I just go walk down and get some. So I actually got the recipe and started making that from home. And so I've tried it a few times from home here the last few years. And I'm actually going to give a shout out to Morgan Huelsman, who many know now as being the executive producer on the Bobby Bones show on Sirius Radio.
Really?
But she had the recipe somehow, and I ended up, I can't remember where she posted it or where she did a video or sent me a video. I can't remember how that happened. But I saw it, and I was like, I'm gonna give this a shot. And so I went ahead and did it, and it was pretty good. It's pretty good. I don't think mine was quite as good as Taco Lucha's, but I think it was pretty competitive. You know, if we're going to use a sports analogy, I didn't win. If like Taco Lucha and I were facing off, I didn't win, but I think it was a close game going into the fourth quarter. I think I was in the game though still. So it was still pretty good, and I'll make it from time to time. So that Chipotle raspberry and black bean dip, man. Tops of that zesty cheese. Delicious, delicious, delicious. You love it or you hate it, Eddie.
Sounds disgusting.
I told you, it's a
lot of them. Absolutely disgusting. From a weird transition from raspberry to the baseball diamond. As we're recording this, obviously this will be out on Friday night, so it'll be past news. But as we're recording this right now at 10:18 Central Time, of course, that's where I'm at, man, Kansas right now. Home game for K-State. It's the first of two against Northern Colorado. 7-3 in the top of the seventh, one out. Northern Colorado is at the plate now. When this podcast comes out, it'll be game one of Oklahoma State coming into town. I might be over exaggerating, but this must be a crucial series for K-State next against Oklahoma State, who's at this moment at the recording of the podcast is ranked sixth in the country in baseball there, and gotta go back to TCU and of course Air Force. They coming in here, Alex, with a four-game losing streak. They lost to Air Force late, 4-3, and then they got swept by TCU, number 19th ranked TCU, last weekend there, and for the second straight year. And I mentioned this in the early daily this week. For the second straight year in a row, K-State gets swept on the road in the conference opening series there, which right now, after Corners Podcast, K-State now 11-11. Alex, what are your initial thoughts about that series from K-State?
You know, I got a few thoughts, Eddie. I got a few thoughts on the I got a few thoughts in the beginning of Big 12 play, just kind of the baseball team in general. So, when we were on the podcast last, we weren't able to get into this a lot. But we got into a little bit, and I was kind of saying, gosh, bummer that first game got canceled against Air Force, because, you know, K-State's rolling. You know, you kind of just want to keep riding it, see if they can you know, get a couple wins against Air Force and then have some momentum going into that TCU game. That first game got canceled. So I was like, okay, you know, if you're K-State, you want to get that Air Force game and really just try to avoid a sweep against TCU. You know, TCU's 19th in the country, top 25 team. You're on the road. You look at the track record of what the team did last year. I didn't think it was realistic to expect them or hope for them to win that series. I just thought, get a game, get home against Northern Colorado. If you can get a win against Air Force, then you'll be in okay position. Northern Colorado's not very good. Yeah, you should be able to get a couple wins against them, and it sets you up for a big showdown at home against Oklahoma State. So that's not exactly what happened, Eddie. They lost to Air Force 4-3. So there goes that play. And then they go into the series with TCU, and they have competitive first game. They lose that game 7-5. I believe, if I recall, that game, and I don't have the box score up. Yes, I do have the box score up. I'm lying. So in that game, that was a game. It was a close, competitive game. You know, a couple costly errors for K-State. In that one, you know, they did make a push. They're late. They scored 3 in the ninth. But it just wasn't enough for them. And then the next two games, they lost by 9 and they lost by 8. I believe one of them, they were actually up by 3. I can't remember which one it was. It was game 2 or game 3. But I think one of them, they were up by 3 at one point, but then TCU broke them both open. Like I guess they lose by 9, lose by 8. So what you wanted to avoid, Eddie, was what happened last year. Last year, they started like 1-5 or 1-6 in Big 12 play, and they would dig themselves in a hole all year long because of it. So I said, just see if you can avoid a sweep. You just don't want to start this season like last season. Well, they haven't started this season like last season. They're only 0-3. They're not like 1-5 or 1-6 yet. But they've got number 6 Oklahoma State rolling in town this weekend. I'm sorry, Eddie. I am not holding my hopes too high that K-State's going to win that series. So if they lose that series, that puts them at 1-5 in Big 12 play. And then guess what? Who their next two series are against? You go on the road against Texas Tech, and they come home against Texas. Like, come on, man. Like, come on, Eddie. Like, come on. Like, this is why you couldn't do that. They're going to start like that again. They're going to have the exact same thing is going to happen this year that happened last year. And, you know, things will – the back half of the schedule is a lot easier because then they got Oklahoma on the road after that. And it's like, good grief, like, I give up, you know. So once May rolls around, they've got KU, they've got Baylor, they've got West Virginia, and it's like, okay, you know, things lighten up, but – You just look at the way the schedule's playing out, and you just see it, Eddie. You just see exactly what happened last year happening again this year. And then if that happens, you're going to be relying on trying to dig yourself out of a hole all season long. And, you know, we'll see. Once again, we'll see what happens against Oklahoma State. But even if you could have, like, just scraped one game off against TCU, and then you come up against Oklahoma State, you can just scrape one away. Just get one at home against Oklahoma State. You know, K-State plays a lot better at home. If you can get one, you're 2-4. And, you know, and if you can take care of these non-con games that are just kind of sandwiched in between, they've got Northern Colorado right now. They've got Creighton in between Oklahoma State and Texas Tech. And then they'll have Omaha and UC Irvine, Wichita State, and Nebraska. Wow, that's a big stretch between Texas and Oklahoma, where they won't be playing Big 12 baseball for 2 weeks there. But you've got some of these non-con games where you can kind of make it up a little bit. But that's just kind of what you were hoping for, and that didn't happen. You know, they were underwhelming against Air Force. They were underwhelming against TCU. And, you know, now they're in a, you know, in a situation where, yeah, you know, they're beating Northern Colorado. I assume they'll win. Northern Colorado is 6-19 on the year, so they should win. And you know, so their record should be 13-11, unless something goes wrong going into that series. But it's still not ideal, Eddie. It's still not ideal. This team got hot. They started slow. They got hot. We thought that they had some momentum. But they have just, they've kind of faltered again. And what the bigger thing that I was getting at was this team is just beginning to feel really predictable to me. And that's what I don't like. And that's what's disappointing me. Is just, you know, they took strides last year. They really did. That was the best K-State baseball team we've seen in a handful of years. And K-State had a really good baseball team back when you and I were there.
Yes, sir.
They won
the
Big 12 when you and I were there. Things really have fallen off since that one. And it felt like last year was kind of the first time we actually had, like, good baseball in Manhattan there in a while. I mean, heck, it started to even fall off at my senior year. They were still pretty good my junior year, but my senior year, they started to dip off. They won the Big 12 my sophomore year. But yeah, I mean, so, you know, they were better, but they weren't there, though, last year. And I think that was clear. Should they make the NCAA tournament? That's a different question. But, you know, K-State was horrible on the road. I mean, they were just horrible on the road last year. Yeah, they were great at home, but they were just awful on the road. And they really were, it wasn't just they were awful on the road. I mean, they got blown out. They got mercy ruled. They got no hit. They got they got their bleeps beat on the road last year. And what's frustrating is when you see them go to TCU, we saw this last year too. They play a competitive first game. You lose 7-5. Okay. Tough hardball loss. They just fall apart in the second half of the series. You lose 14-5 and you lose 11-3. Like, why? Why are you losing by 9-8 runs after you play a competitive? And we saw that last year. They played a competitive game one. It happened to start Big 12 play last year against Oklahoma State. They were competitive in, like, the first game. And then they just got the doors blown off of them the second or the third. Or maybe they were, like, it was, like, a four-game where they played the first two close and got the doors blown off the last two. I can't remember, but it was a similar type of trend. And then at the beginning of this season, Eddie, they play number 10 Arizona. They lose 8-6, close competitive game. They play Michigan and Auburn, who are not as good as Arizona. They lose 10-2 and 12-1. It's just, they're winning at home, they're losing on the road, and they're getting blown out by good teams. And it's just, I don't know, Eddie, I was hoping that this team was going to be able to take a step, and they still can. It's not acting like they can. I mean, gosh, it's March, March 29th, okay? Like, they've got plenty of time to break these habits. So let's, the season's, what, half over, not even half over? Just began the 12 play, so we're not act like it's a doomsday or anything like that. I mean, they just have time to turn around. But I mean, they're 11-11, Eddie. They're 11-11 right now. I think they'll be 13-11 after the Northern Colorado series, but they're 11-11. That's underwhelming. That's not what I expected. I expected them to up their game a little bit. I expected them to be a little bit better. I get they're playing a more difficult schedule this year, 100%. They're absolutely playing a more difficult schedule than they did last year. That is probably part of it, but I just don't. It's just frustrating to see that first series against TCU play out the way it did. And I have a feeling they'll be more competitive with Oklahoma State at home because they'll be at home. I mean, that's what I expect. Oklahoma State's better. They're ranked 6th in the country. I bet you K-State goes out and wins the game, Eddie. I bet you they do. They're at home. They did it last year. They took 2 or 3 against teams at home that were ranked. They just couldn't do it on the road. So I wouldn't surprise me if they play well against Oklahoma State at home, but they're just becoming a little too predictable for me. And unlike last year, they really don't have a spot in the schedule, Eddie, that they can bank on being able to make some games up. They had some spots in the schedule last year where they can kind of make some games up, get some wins in. That really doesn't exist much on this schedule, like, you know, outside of this Northern Colorado. These 2 games against them. Because like I said, they got Creighton on there. They always Utah State on the road. Mm-hmm. They got UC Irvine, Omaha, and they got Nebraska on the road. I mean, Wichita State again, and then Virginia Tech on the road, and then the rest are all Big 12. I mean, there's just not there. Like, it's just not there the way it was last year. That relief. So, you know, we'll see the way it plays out. You know, hopefully they prove me wrong. But I've just been a little underwhelmed with their play so far. In the season, and I've just been hoping that they turn around. They did for a while, but now they're kind of back on, like, a kind of reverting back to some of those predictable ways. So, you know, Pete Hughes has his work cut out for him. I heard your daily delivery on the suite. 300% adjustments. You got to be able to make adjustments better. Period. I mean, it's that simple. Second, I don't know what Brian Spoeler's talking about with them having one of the best offenses in the Big 12 potentially.
I didn't understand that.
No, I mean, you scored 3 against TCU, 5 against TCU, 5 against TCU, 3 against Air Force. You know, you had to make a comeback to beat Morehead State in one game. Well, you scored 5, 5, and 6 against Central Connecticut, and you got scored 1 run against Bakersfield, 1 run against Auburn, 2 runs against Michigan. I just don't understand that comment. Maybe if you're looking at what's the ceiling, sure, you know, K-State's got they absolutely can be a good offense.
No doubt, but
they've been inconsistent, you know what I mean? And you can't rely on inconsistent offense to carry you, you know? That was a good daily delivery. Go check that out if you haven't, to tell the listeners, but they just need to set their game up a little bit and be, you know, be better, and they need to go on the road and need to show a little more grit. You know, they just last year and a half, they just haven't done it. And like I said, I'm not going to get on here and talk about his doomsday because it's not. You know, they still got a ton of games left. Pete Hughes is a good coach. He's a good manager. You know, he can, you know, I get confidence in figuring it out, but I just expect better than 500 baseball at this point, Eddie. I just did.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Northern Colorado scored 2 in the top of the 7th inning in the spike. 5 errors committed by this Northern Colorado Bears team. The only trip by 2 is ahead in the bottom of the 7th inning at Toyota Family Stadium after recording of this podcast, 10:33 Central Time. Episode 94, Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, K-State 7, Northern Colorado now 5, as K-State is hitting right now with Josh Nikoloff at the plate. So Northern Colorado showing some grit. Talk about grit there, Alex. Northern Colorado, despite all those mistakes in the field.
6-19 Northern Colorado is showing grit. this is my point, Eddie. They've got 5 players, they've got 6 wins. And they're showing grit, and, you know, K-State's only up 2 in the 7th. It's like, you know, I'm like, you know, show a little, you know, I don't know. It's just, we're not seeing it. We even saw stuff from last year's team, you know, and I feel like a little more than we've seen of this year's team. I you know, it's just, I don't know, I don't know.
Just to cut you off there, Josh Nikoloff just hit a bomb out of Toyn Family Stadium now. K-State got some more breathing room now. 8-5 now, folks. So this one is looking to be a wild one now, folks. But K-State badly needed that. This is no one out. Bottom of the 7th. 8-5 K-State. And Josh Nikoloff went deep off of Mansur Ashton there. And so they got the 3-1 lead back. So they get one back here. Let's see if K-State can just keep this thing rolling. There's just so much to get K-State sports to get into. So we'll keep our eyes on that for the rest of the podcast. Basketball, there's a lot of news coming out of here. Especially for the men's team. Obviously, last week, Jerome Tang named a new head coach of K-State men's basketball. Officially named one of his assistant coaches. Today, Jareem Dowling, the assistant coach now on Jerome Tang's staff. And yeah, Alex mentioned it a few moments ago. I haven't seen anything on Shane Southwell yet. We'll still keep our eyes on that. But the transfer portal, folks, back in play. And one of those, if you missed out on the Celton Miguel daily that popped out, that's kind of emergency daily there, because I didn't know about it until I hopped on Twitter on that when the time I found out about it. So Celton Miguel going to the transfer portal. I know Mitch Fortner talked about it at the 93 in the K-Man, the game radio station at the K-Man. 93.3, 1350 K-Man, the game show, which is focused also on K-State sports there. So he talked about that. So Miguel headed to the transfer portal. And Alex, I don't know if you been keeping up with all the guys, but add two more to the list. Carlton Lingard and Luke Kasuki going to the transfer portal as well. So good piece comes here to K-State. Jerome Tang, he's getting his coaching staff together, and then some players are headed to the transfer portal. So what are kind of your thoughts? And for K-State, Celton Miguel, backing up to him for just a moment. Yeah, one of that big three, that last recruiting class, kind of. Bruce Weber there. I mentioned it in that daily over the weekend there. Again, check that out if you have not already. With the crap. Oh, boy. Now drawing a blank. Nigel Pack and Davion Bradford. There we go. Davion Bradford. There, that's kind of a big loss for K-State there. And then two guys that kind of been inconsistent. And Lingard hasn't been getting enough playing time. But even then, hasn't really got a chance to show his stuff. Now he's going to get a fresh start. And Luke Kasuki, everyone talked about him as a highly talented three-point shooter. And I have my thoughts on this podcast before. And I'll say it again. Very underwhelming, to say the least, from Kasubi's standpoint. He was supposed to be that sharp shooter at three to spread the defense out. We ain't seen none of that his 2 years at K-State. So, Alex, kind of your thoughts on some moving pieces for K-State men's basketball season right off the bat for Jerome Tang.
It's funny. You mentioned Kasubi, and he entered the portal or was announced he entered the portal today. And Sean McNeil, who's also announced Sean McNeil, West Virginia, entered the portal. And that K-State had already reached out to him within hours of that coming out. So it's almost like, okay, we're going to replace this sharpshooter that didn't come to be for one of the sharpest shooters in the Big 12 last year for West Virginia, and Sean McNeil.
That would be a nice get, though.
Who, by the way, he was sure a sharpshooter against K-State that NCAA tournament. Not NCAA tournament game. No, I'm wishing there. That Big 12 tournament game that we saw out there a couple weeks ago in Bramlage. He would miss a three against them there in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so my thoughts really are not surprised. Not surprised. I knew that that some guys were going to transfer out. I just didn't know who they were. I think that was kind of the bigger question. It's like, okay, there's going to be some movement, there's going to be some turnover, especially because Jerome Tang's going to need some scholarships to go get like his guys, go get his dudes. And so Jerome Tang talked about, we want to evaluate in-house before we go out of the house. And so I think, Eddie, that this is a byproduct of the evaluation done internally, players and coaching staff kind of having a kumbaya and talking about, the future, what's your future look like here, and, what do you want to accomplish, and I just don't think, and let's see, this is 100% speculation, buddy, 100% speculation, but I just don't think there is going to be much of a role for Luke Suki or Carl Lengard at K-State moving forward. I could be wrong. That could be speculation, but I just don't feel like there was really going to be much of a role with them. And I just have a feeling that probably was open and honest conversations that coaches had with them. And, they had to decide, what do we want to do? Do we want to stay and, keep kind of writing this out here? Because this isn't like the NFL. You can't just, cut a player. I mean, you can, maybe encourage them, but you can't just, cut a player. So, you know, you want to stay here and, you know, stay under scholarship, or is it a deal where you want to go look for somewhere else where you can get some more playing time, you get the reset button? Those guys are moving on. Once again, could be wrong, but there's been multiple reports that, you know, there's going to be some movement. And, you know, Jerome Tang was going to, you know, he was open and honest about the fact that he was going to do some internal, you know, some internal stuff and figure out who fits, who doesn't.
You're right.
You know,
yep.
Kind of before they hit the recruiting trail. So those two were announced. Celton Miguel was the one that was a little more interesting. You mentioned it. He was part of the bigger, Powell was one of the top recruits coming into that Ivy League class, Davion Bradford. And I think that was a little more difficult to swallow, but it didn't really surprise me either, just because Celton just didn't take, he just didn't quite take the step that I think we were hoping to see from him this year. And I think that, you know, being banged up and some injuries and things like that were probably part of it. I think also part of it is he really didn't develop a jump shot. Good defender, but he just never really developed offensively. He had flashes. He had the occasional 15 to 20 point games. He was good going downhill. We can get the pass, we can get to the rim. I really liked the way he played defense. I think there could have been a role for him on this team. But again, probably a situation where Celton knew, I don't know if starting here is realistic for me, and maybe he wants to go find a place where he can get more playing time and he can go start. And so looking at it from that vantage point, it didn't surprise me, terribly surprised me. So like I said, that, you know, kind of stinks to see him walk out the door kind of with the expectations that were in place, and like knowing what he could have done defensively, but not that surprising. All in all, I wish those three, the best in their endeavors. They're in the transfer portal. Hopefully, they can find a spot. Hopefully, they can stick, and hopefully, they can play some good basketball. You know, they're three good guys. You know, good dudes, and you know, hopefully, hopefully they find their spots and find their niches, and they can go. And hopefully, Luke Zuki can go somewhere, that shot can come to fruition for him, and he can kind of get back to the player that K-State envisioned when they were bringing him in. See them leave, but the good news is that it opens three more scholarships up for Jerome Tang, and I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing. He can go get his guys. There's more scholarships for him to get. Kind of gives him a little more flexibility.
Yeah.
You know, a little more flexibility to go out into recruiting trail, hit the transfer portal, and go get his guys. And he said this. He said it from the get-go, Eddie. He was interviewed on Stick'em 365 the other day. I think it was yesterday. And they said, are you going to be recruiting like the same type of players that K-State's recruiting, or are you going to be recruiting some different guys? He said, we're going to be recruiting some different guys. Like, i.e., like, we're going to go after some guys they may not have typically gone after. K-State's gone after 5 stars. They've gone after 4 stars. They've gone after some of the top transfers in the transfer portal. They're going after, like, everyone. And I'm seeing Flando, and I'm seeing Derek Young, and I'm seeing them like constantly tweeting, okay, K-State's offered this guy. Okay, they've offered that guy. Okay, they've reached out to this transfer, that transfer. I mean, these are not guys that Bruce Weber was going after. So, look, I talked about it last week. Jerome Tang's got connections all over the country. Known for his recruiting. He's brought in 3 coaches. Only one has been announced officially with K-State, but he's brought in 3 coaches. That are all known to be dogs on the recruiting trail. Like I think that was the exact word that someone used. Like, his coaches are dogs on the recruiting trail. They recruit, man. They recruit, and the associate coach, who also, again, I don't think he's been named yet officially, he's one of the top assistants to Texas. Great at recruiting the state. We already know how great Jerome Tang was at recruiting the state of Texas. And so they're going to go after some guys. And as Jerome Tang mentioned in the press conference, they're going to elevate that talent level. Not looking to rebuild. That's the famous quote of that. He's not looking to rebuild, looking to elevate. And I think that's exactly what it does. And I think that opening those scholarships up gives him an easier path, you know, kind of more runway to be able to do that and to put K-State in a position to potentially make the NCAA tournament this upcoming year. And there's some guys that you know aren't going anywhere. Jerome Tang went to New York to meet with Marquise Noel's family this last weekend. You know, Marquise is just gushing over Joe Dangro and gushing over Marquise. Like that, like that's happening. You know, Marquise Noel, he's coming back. There's you know, they got a connection. They clearly see a path together. That's something that's going to be happening, which makes me feel good. I definitely want Marquise Noel back. Nigel Pack seems, based on interviews and social media activity, he seems to be on board with this if he doesn't go to the NBA, which I don't think he will. That could change. Maybe he does end up going to the NBA. He does have a change of heart. He does end up transferring. But based on interviews he's done, based on social media stuff that I've seen, which included him having dinner on Friday night at Bourbon and Baker with Coach Tang, I don't think that Nigel Pack is going to leave. I really say that hesitantly because I don't know, but I get that feeling. I know about Marquise Noel. He's coming back. But Nigel, I think, a little hairier, but I think he's coming back. So if you, the moral of the story, Eddie, is if you can get those two guys back and Jerome Tang has some options, I think that puts K-State in a good position heading into next year. And look, if you can get those two back, Eddie, I said this earlier, you're going to have one of the best backcourts in the Big 12. You are. You just are. Marquise Noel, and then Nigel Pack, and K-State goes out and gets a third guard, which I'm pretty sure they'll do, based on some offers that they've thrown out there. If you can do that, you've got one of the best backcourts in the country. At that point, Eddie, you just need to go get a formidable frontcourt. Because they didn't even have a formidable frontcourt. I mean, their frontcourt was non-existent. It wasn't there. So, if you can go get a formidable frontcourt, then K-State's in a good position. So, I'll assume that would be the focus. I would also really like to see Ish Masood return. That's another one I want to throw out there. I would make an argument he's the third most important guy to come back behind Noel and Pack. I think Ish Masood could fit really well on Tang's offense and his style and just really his style of play. It just seems like Ish kind of fits his style of play, and Ish still has two more years. He still has two more years of eligibility, so he's not just going to be coming back for like a senior year. He was only a sophomore last year, so there's a little more runway with him too. So I think it's important to try to bring him back if possible as well. He's lanky, he can shoot, he can move the ball. So we'll see what happens. Those are three more. I'm sure there's probably going to be some more that come. I think the question again is, who are they going to be? What players are going to be the ones that leave, and which ones stay?
And also, I'll throw this one in there. Not a Jerome Tang related. Mark Smith was chosen along with 21 other seniors to participate. This podcast will come out on Friday, so this game will be already in the books. But Mark Smith was nominated to show up to the Reese's College All-Star Game, which is going down on Friday afternoon in New Orleans. So he got chosen, and I believe he's going to go down there and play in that game. Mark Smith is the first Wildcat to play in this All-Star Game since Barry Brown back in 2019. Again, this is kind of put the book on Mark Smith here, one and done at K-State. Man, he was a huge difference maker for this team, and it's unfortunate that he can't stay another year. I would love to have him for another year.
I would love to see him in Coach Tank's system.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah. As a fifth-year senior, he was named All Big 12 third team, as well as All Newcomer team. As well, he led K-State in double-doubles this year with eight and rebounding, average almost 9 a game, defensive rebounds almost 7 a game, and while he ranks second in scoring, almost scoring pretty much 13 a game, he had 5 20-point games for K-State this past season, and double-digit scoring games as well. He became the shortest player to lead a power conference in rebounding. And we talked about this a lot. While he finished second in the Big 12 in double-doubles, Mark Smith's 260 total rebounds this past year, were the most, and this is in higher quality. Michael Beasley set the school record with 408 back in the 2007-08 seasons there, as well as Mark Smith making it, leaving a definite mark on his time at K-State.
No doubt. You know, Mark Smith played an enormous role on this team this last year. And if it weren't for Mark Smith, I don't know where this team would have been. I really don't know. He was big time. He was big time, and he was one of those guys that really overperformed this last year, in my opinion. And kind of found his niche. He kind of found his niche at K-State and kind of blossomed here after kind of sputtering around at Illinois there, and then Missouri, and then came to K-State and then kind of blossomed. I think that's kind of what stinks with him leaving, is you kind of feel like, man, like we were just beginning to kind of tap into that Mark Smith potential. Because, we hadn't seen it that way in his career until that final year at K-State. So kind of a bummer that he he's leaving. Granted, who knows, he may transfer it out again. With Coach Weber, leaving, because, he loves Coach Weber. He absolutely loved Coach Weber. He was probably the most vocal of any of the players. But either way, he had a great year. He deserves the spotlight. He deserves the accolades, and he deserves the moment. He deserves the moment to be able to go out and, show others what we saw, and begin to build a profile for himself. See if he can do if professional basketball isn't his career. He was a double-double machine at times this season. With some of the stat lines he put up were crazy. So, like I said, he really deserves that moment. He deserves to be able to show off. He's worked his tail off. I think Bruce Weber called him a bull. I think that's a pretty accurate analogy. And for all the work that he's put in, for all he's gone through, it's really nice to see him recognized and rewarded for that hard work. So, give him love. He deserves the love. I know he's pumped about it. I saw him tweet something on Twitter today about it. And like I said, it is well deserved for him. Like I said, it's kind of bittersweet. You're really happy for him, but like I said, at the back of your mind, you're like, gosh, I just wish we could have gotten him for like another year. Especially under Joe King's system. It feels like they could have really gelled together. And, Mark Smith could have continued to elevate. Elevate his game, because I feel like he and Drum Tank really have similar mentalities and personalities, and that could have really been something cool to see. But we will never see it. Either way, really grateful for what he did for his year at K-State, and just wish him the best. Hope he has a great All-Star game. And, like I said, whatever he decides to do, whether or not it is trying to play professional basketball or if it's just moving on with his career, like I said, I wish him the best in those endeavors. And hopefully this isn't the last we see of Mark Smith.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Episode 94, Triple P continues on this Tuesday night. Recording episode 94, Eddie Greer, Alex out there living in San Diego. I'm here in Manhattan, Kansas. The Pearl Project Podcast continues, and Northern Colorado continues to make things a little more interesting for K-State.
Yes, they do.
They just added one, once again, in the top of the eighth inning. The lead is right back down to two, with two outs now, 8-6. K-State now clinging to a two-run lead again. The line here for Northern Colorado, 6 runs, 13 hits, and the funny part, 5 errors, and you're still in this ballgame. K-State, 8 runs, 11 hits. No errors again. This podcast, this episode will go out on Friday, so this will be kind of past news. But K-State fighting off these Bears in Northern Colorado, doing everything possibly can to try to take this game. Obviously, they play these two teams play tomorrow, and then we just talked about it In the first segment of tonight's episode, K-State will host Oklahoma State, who's come here ranked 6th in the country to Toyn Family Stadium this weekend. So K-State better not play around, not much longer for the rest of this game, but for tomorrow's game too. So they're 11-11. Obviously, Alex touched on that already. Josh Nikoloff extended the lead in the bottom half of the seventh inning, and Northern Colorado gets that run right back with a run of their own. And Dylan Phillips, 2-for-3. Nikoloff is 2-for-4. Cole Johnson's also 2-for-4 in the game. Dom Johnson, who had a hitting streak, was snapped over the weekend. He is 1-for-4 tonight, as this game is at almost 11 Central Time because of the furious winds here in Manhattan, Kansas. They had to stop the game. And also, lightning was in the area as well. So this is going deep into the night here, folks. And Northern Colorado is making things a lot more interesting. And kind of wrap up the basketball talk here. I saw this morning. Alex, you probably saw this as well. John Kurtz tweeted out, our guy John Kurtz, Dean Wade out for the rest of the season. It's not a foot, but he has to get knee surgery. So he was having a tremendous season for Cleveland Cavaliers. I believe they're like 42-33, something
they're
like that.
They're having a good year. They're having a good year.
Yeah, and they're going to get a top six seed in the Eastern Conference Finals. They're not going to, unless they self-destruct, they're going to avoid a play-in game. So that's good for them. But for Dean Wade, it's not good for him. Obviously, if you've been a longtime fan of K-State, obviously you know the career Dean Wade's had here, hobbled by injuries, and he has showed flashes of what he could have done while he's at K-State. I know Keenan kind of oohed and awed when we had him on the podcast a few weeks back. Tough deal for Dean Wade there. He's going to have to get surgery and going to have to pick himself back up off the floor once again. But, man, I mean, such a talent and another setback, unfortunately, for Dean.
Oh, yeah. I feel awful for him. I'm exact same as John. You know, I saw the news as well on SportsCenter, actually, I believe, that tells you in and of itself what you need to know about the season that Dean Wade's happening. If I'm learning about Dean Wade's season-ending knee surgery on SportsCenter, that means he's having a good year, because SportsCenter would not be talking about it if he was not. Dean Wade, you mentioned it. He's having a great year. He started probably a fourth of the games this year for the Cats. I think it was 24 or something along those lines. He's starting a lot. He's playing really well. He had a great highlight reel dunk the other night, too. Or not the other night. It was like a week or two ago. Oh, man, he had a really, really nice play that I don't know if it was on SportsCenter Top 10, but it was one of those plays that could have been. It was definitely a really, really nice crossover. Maybe it was a crossover and a three, or was it a crossover? I can't remember what it was. It was a really nice play. Moral of the story is having a great year. And what really stinks about it is that this seems to be what happens with Dean. Happened to him at K-State. Now it's happening to him at Cleveland. Plays well, gets in a groove, and he's finally playing in like Dean Wade, and then boom, injury. Happened twice in K-State, it's happened now at Cleveland, and it just feels like he can't catch a break, man. It just feels like he can never catch a break, which is such a shame because Dean Wade has so much talent. He's just gushing with talent, gushing with potential. We did not see the best of Dean Wade at K-State. Mm-hmm. We did not see it. He absolutely could have been a freaking beast at K-State, but two things stunted that from happening. One, lack of self-confidence. I think we all know about Dean Wade's lack of self-confidence when he was at K-State. He really, really lacked it. Big stretches of time, and he was a lot of times his biggest critic, and his biggest, really his biggest enemy, to be 100% honest. And then the second was injuries. when he'd get over that, and he would start playing good basketball and just become dominant. Dean, boom, stress fracture in the foot. Boom, you know, meniscus tear in the knee. Boom, you know, something with his ankle. I mean, just something, you know, something popping up in the leg or knee, or sorry, the foot or knee area. And it just was almost like clockwork, man. And so it's just, I was really hoping that he was kind of out of that. Kind of that pattern. And so to see him back in it, I think that's part of why John Kerr said this is absolutely awful. It's just because it's the pattern, man. It's the fact that it keeps happening to him. He just can't get that break, and it just sucks for him. He's playing so well. Clearly wasn't having any self-confidence issues. And boom, there goes your meniscus. It's just a bummer. It really is a bummer. And, you know, the good news is meniscus tears. That's typically, after that surgery, what, a six-week recovery, six-ish-week recovery, something along those lines. I don't know what they put for the timetable on D-Wade to return. I don't know if they did designate him out for the season or not. They may have because the season's almost over. And so, you know, season's over, you go into the playoffs. Even if you go into the Big NBA Finals, what goes into June. That's a couple months away. So I don't he probably is out of the season, just trying to think through the timeline right now. But either way, nothing that's going to just cripple him and cripple his career, but it is something that's probably will end the season. So that's just a bummer for Dean. Just wish him a speedy recovery, and hopefully he can come back and he can play meaningful basketball as Cleveland again next year. Because you mentioned it, Cleveland's—they're not a good team. They're playing well this year. They're young, and I think that they're going to be a good, young, fun team for years to come.
Yep. Yes, they are. They're one of those teams in the NBA right now that are on the rise a little bit. So definitely.
And Cleveland's just getting bit, period, because Evan Mobley also got hurt the other night for their rookie, top rookie who they took with his number two overall pick this last year. So they're just getting bit. They're just getting bit in general by the injury bug, which is why I know we're not an NBA podcast. We have absolutely no affiliation to Cleveland. But, they seem like everyone's getting bit right now for them, and this is a worse time for an NBA team who's making a playoff push with, what, six, seven, eight games left, somewhere in that ballpark. Do we get hit with injury bugs? Not ideal. Not ideal. But it's okay, Cleveland. I think that you still can make a run this year, and if you don't, they'll be back next year. They're a young team.
Yep, yes they are. And said I was going to wrap up basketball news. I just honestly stumbled on this like 5 minutes ago. As of last week, Alex, Frank Martin, who was fired from South Carolina. Of course, Frank Martin used to be the head coach here at K-State at the beginning of my time before Bruce took over. Frank Martin is going to be the next head coach for Massachusetts. So that's good for them on that part. Actually, it's called UMass Amherst, is what I am reading at. Yep.
Yep, he is. You're right. He's a new coach at UMass. Actually, did see that, and I actually saw part of his press conference, which I should probably mention. He obviously mentioned K-State a handful of times. And by the way, happy for Frank. Good for Frank.
Yeah.
Get the job at UMass. I believe his wife is from UMass initially, so that's actually kind of a good, kind of like a coming home thing a little bit for them. So that's pretty cool. He kind of run his course kind of similar to Bruce down in South Carolina, but it seems like he landed in a good spot. You know, I think that's going to be a good spot for him. He seems really excited about it. But he mentioned in his press conference, he said K-State had their most successful season in their history under him. I was like, okay, Frank, like, you know better than that. Like, you know that K-State did not have the best season in history under you. You look at the history of, I don't know how to do your best, Frank. I literally heard this today. But you know, I'm just like, you know the history. Big 12 championships, if you combine it all. They've gone to, 16 Sweet 16s, like 9 or 10 Elite 8, something like that. And it's just like, this team, they're rich in history. This Tex Winter, who was, you know, who created the triangle, was there. You had Jack Hartman. You had, you know, all of these, DeLon Kruger. I mean, the history ran to hell. I mean, even Bruce Weber won 2 Big 12 titles and Frank didn't win one. And Bruce Weber went to an Elite 8. Frank Mark went to an Elite 8. And it's like, you can make an argument that Bruce Weber had more success than you. So, interesting that he, I would make that argument. I would say it. Yes. Frank did have the better stretch than Bruce. But Bruce accomplished more in his tenure.
Yeah.
As the case that goes to Frank. Once again, nothing against Frank. I have nothing against Frank. I just said he, the way he said that was very interesting. And I was like, interesting. And he also said the similar thing about like South Carolina. South Carolina did make a Final Four with them. But I think that was the only NCAA tournament appearance they had with Frank Martin. And I believe they were like an 8 seed or a 9 seed when they made the NCAA tournament. So it's not like they were just some top 16 team that was a top 4 seed and that type of thing. No, I mean they beat teams in the NCAA tournament. You gotta give them credit there. But it is interesting, but look, we all know Frank. Frank gets excited, you know, he gets talking, and he knows what he was doing, just nothing. No hard feelings with Frank. I saw that today, and I had to mention that once you mentioned Frank Martin. But I am happy for him. Like I said, I think it's going to be a good fit for him. It'll be interesting to see how they do. You know, I think he can bring UMass to, kind of bring that program up. A program that has some history. I mean, John Calipari coached at UMass at one point in his early days. Now they got Frank Bart coming in there. And they've had some other coaches there in the Minutemen. So I really think that he could do some things there and, resurrect a program that used to have a lot of history back in the day. So eager to see what happens there. Eager to see if he can get them back on their feet. He kind of soured there in South Carolina. His teams weren't very good there his last few years, kind of similar Bruce Weber, K-State. But eager to see if he can get them going. So like I said, good for Frank. He is good person. Obviously a good basketball coach, and we can debate about the tactics all we want. Sometimes he goes a little overboard on the sidelines, but his intentions are good. He's a good coach. Wish him the best.
The Purple Project Podcast continues, episode 94. Eddie Greer, Alex Hayden for the Purple Project Podcast. As this podcast continues to roll on here, as we come to coming close to the end of this podcast, so. Yeah, I wanted to talk about football. There's obviously been a lot going on. Obviously, a lot of recruiting, a lot of recruits walking on the K-State practice today. Jordy Nelson, I caught that video, spoke to the team a little bit this afternoon. I'm definitely going to put something together. Unless we get a special guest on the podcast next week, we'll have to put spring ball. Of course, we'll have to reach out to our guy Keithan again to see what day or what week he wants to be on the podcast as well. So I'm gonna probably table that for next week. If we do, it'll be a 2-show week for sure. And talk, get caught up with football stuff, because I know from what I've been looking at, anyways, a lot of recruits been inside Bill Snyder Family Stadium today. There's a lot going on. Recruiting, spring football in session there. And there's a lot happening with Chris Kleiman's group. So a lot going on there as well. So we'll definitely get you all squared away with that. I do want to touch, go out of bounds here on this edition of the Pro Project Podcast. Obviously, we are deep in this podcast now. We haven't mentioned the Final Four, Alex. Now, we are finally to the Final Four, folks. The only Big 12 team, obviously. KU, after demolishing Miami in the second half of that game, they're playing Villanova. And that's the first game on TBS. this weekend, on Saturday to be exact. And then, of course, the primetime game. How about Duke, North Carolina, round three? Mike Krzyzewski's team, the journey will end in the Final Four for him. The rivalry renewed, part three, the sequel between those two schools. And the last time these two schools met, North Carolina spoiled Mike Krzyzewski's last home game at Durham. So we'll see who gets the last laugh. And who gets the last laugh is going to go to the national title game to play the winner of KU in Villanova. Alex, kind of your thoughts on these, on kind of both of these matchups, and your kind of your thoughts on the whole bracket up until this point. Obviously, we've seen Cinderella with St. Peter's, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, St. Peter's ending there against North Carolina to a halt, but nobody saw that coming. There, Villanova having to fight off Houston to get to the Final Four there. KU had a battle back from Miami there in that game. Duke taking care of business in their game. The cardiac Duke Blue Devils, they seem to find a way in the fourth quarter, late in games, to pull just to get it done, to survive in advance, right? In North Carolina.
Yeah.
Who would have thought, right?
I know, man. Coach, you think they're having a down year, boom, Final Four.
Yeah, Hubert Davis deserves a lot of credit. Return that team around. I thought these guys had no shot. I'll just be honest with that. But man, that team, North Carolina, they got hot, and here they are playing against Duke again for a spot for a national championship game.
Definitely want to dive in that quickly on a football note too. You mentioned big recruits, and obviously K-State did have some big recruits, and we'll talk about that here in the coming days and weeks. But just two that were notable were that they had Dylan Edwards, who was the running back, star running back at Derby, and then they also had the quarterback from Mays, and what is it? Is he I'm blanking on his name. At the moment. Quarterback from Mays. Both really, really good recruits. Two of the top recruits in the state of Kansas. And if you recall, we had a conversation with Keith the last time he was on of how do you recruit, get kids in Kansas to stay in Kansas and go to Kansas State? And how do you win Kansas City? How do you win the state of Kansas? Because K-State hasn't been doing a good job of that. So now you've got a couple guys. They're two of the top of the state. You got them on the radar. You're going after them. Can K-State go after them enough and land two of the top players in the state?
Yep.
To be determined, Daddy. To be determined. Yep. Probably a good thing for us to talk to with Keith and whenever we talk to him again. But pivoting back to the basketball, because that is what's going on right now. First off, kudos to St. Peter's. First 15 seed ever go to the Elite Eight. Quite a run for them. It did end as abruptly as I thought it would. I figured at some point, Eddie, they were just going to get the door blown off of them. I just didn't know when it was going to happen. And I didn't think that St. Peter's was just going to get some really close loss. I just felt like at some point they were going to like winning, and then just boom, they were going to get smashed. And that's exactly what happened. They lost next one. They scored 49 points against North Carolina, and it probably wasn't even that close. North Carolina completely dominated them, but still, amazing job by St. Peter's. They really played just incredible basketball. Put on a hell of a show, really, for us and for everyone to see them go on that run. They did such a good job there. Their coach was able to get an offer and leave for Seton Hall. They haven't even left the building yet. So. before he took that job at Seton Hall, so he was out the door, man. He was out.
Yeah,
he was out quickly there. But with the Final Four, look at you. I think that somebody brought up a point, and this is no disrespect to KU at all, and there's nothing they can do about it. You cannot control your schedule. You can't do it. You can't control your schedule. But I believe that said they were the first team in NCAA history, or they were one of the first teams in NCAA history to make the Final Four without playing a team that was in Kim Palm's like top 32.
Oh, gosh.
Like top 32 ranked teams in the country. And, I mean, KU didn't even play it. KU legitimately, I think, did not play a top 25 team.
No.
In their path to the Final Four. Hell, like I said, you may argue they didn't play a top 35 team in their path to the Final Four. I legitimately cannot recall an easier path for a Final Four team. Their path was so insanely easy. K-State could have brought me the Final Four with that path. it was wild how easy it was. First off, they were in by far the weakest region. I think you and I talked about that when the calendar, when the bracket came out. I brought me to set it. I was like, gosh, that region sucks. Like, the Midwest region is horrible. Like, KU's probably going to make it out of there. I think I had Auburn just because that was Homer bias. That was playing. Not want KU to make the Final Four, but they were clearly the best team in that region. And then all of a sudden, all the top seeds just started getting knocked off in their region. And it's like, okay. So, San Diego State, obviously, I thought that if someone could potentially give them a little bit of trouble, I thought San Diego State might, just because San Diego State plays a style of basketball that really makes KU uncomfortable. They play slow. They kind of like Texas Tech. They play slow. They're kind of more of a defensive team. And those are teams that kind of give KU a little more trouble because KU has not been a great defensive team this year. And they really rely on kind of running and gunning, you know, and scoring and winning, you know, high shootouts. That's why Texas Tech has had so much success against KU. You know, they beat KU comfortably at home, and they went to overtime with them in Allen Fieldhouse. And they did lose a close game to them in the Big 12 championship. But either way, you get the point. They really gave KU a lot of problems. And it was partially, I think, that style that they played. But you know, so they dodged that bullet, you know. San Diego State found a way to pee right down their legs after winning that game for 39 and a half minutes against Creighton. And they did everything in their power to get it to overtime, in a bad way, by the way, and lose. And Creighton lost one of their best players, of course, in that matchup. So Creighton's now like six scholarship players in their matchup against KU, and they already didn't match up well. They almost beat them. It was a one-point game with a minute and a half left. And KU was able to find a way to get through it. They go on. They play Providence, which has got to be the biggest joke of a four seed, man. That is not a top 16 school. No offense to Creighton, but that is not a top 16 school. I don't know how they ended up as a four seed. I know that they had a decent season, but just wild that they were up there, and, you know, KU beat a bad basketball team. And then they proceeded to, the Providence is bad, but you get my point. Then they proceeded to play Miami, who I actually thought Miami could maybe give them a little bit of trouble.
Which they did.
In the first half.
Which they did.
In the first half, but oh my gosh, the second half, man, 47-15 was the score. It's like, KU was unstoppable the second half. And so they beat the 10 seed Miami. So they beat a 16 seed, a 9 seed, a 4 seed, by the worst 4 seed I've ever seen, by the way, and then a 10 seed. And I guess it was the Final Four. And the average seeding of the teams they played was like 7.5 or 8.5. So
I see KU, it. Yeah.
Incredible. I don't need to spend so much time on KU, but KU, such an easy path for them to the Final Four. Now it's going to get a little more difficult. The good news for them, the bad news for us, well, I mean, maybe our listeners are cheering for KU. I have no idea. But Villanova is arguably their best player, ruptured their Achilles in the opening night game. So, you know, they'll be without one of their best players, who also leads the team in minutes, and I think they're second in points, second assists. They'll be out, so Villanova will be shorthanded as well.
They've been playing shorthanded. They're even more shorthanded. Yep.
Yeah, they're even more shorthanded, exactly. So I think that because of that, by the way, Villanova, they're always good, man. Jay Wright, he is just as steady as they can be. What an underrated coach. What an underrated coach, an underrated program. And Villanova, they just win. They just win. They just win. the difference between Villanova and Gonzaga is that Villanova wants national championships. That was one national championships. Gonzaga cannot get, or just quite gotten that. He's gone to the game, but he hasn't quite won it. Villanova's won two or three national championships.
I'd say two. I'm pretty sure it's two national championships.
It's two. Okay, so maybe it's two, and then maybe I think they lost one.
I think they lost one along the way, but I know it's two championships for far I can remember.
But they've won. They've won national championships. Yep. That's a really, really good program. So, you know, there's no doubt in my mind Villanova's going to come out. They're going to give KU a fight. But I kind of lean KU just because Villanova's a little short-handed.
Unfortunately.
Everything is just kind of breaking right for KU right now. You flip to the other side, you get the North Carolina-Duke matchup. Duke has not been slighted in their journey. Which is ironic, because I didn't think Duke would be able to make it this far, because they didn't seem like that tough of a team in the regular season. But they have beat Michigan State. They have beaten Duke. They beat Michigan State. They've beaten Texas Tech. That's what I meant to say. And then in the Final Four, in the Elite Eight, they beat in the Elite Eight. They beat Michigan State in the second round.
Hang on, let me get it so quick. Hang on.
Who did they play in the Sweet 16?
Hold up. Hold up. I'm gonna pull it up.
Okay, here okay. I'll keep talking. But either way, their path has been, they've earned it. They've earned their trip to the Final Four. They've showed grit. Eddie there mentioned the cardiac Blue Devils, and that's exactly what they've been. Winning nail biters against prospectively. Texas Tech, and then against Michigan State. You know, I do think they played Texas Tech in the Sweet 16.
Okay, I got a schedule up right here.
They did play Texas Tech.
All right, so Cal State, Fullerton, in their first round matchup, beat them handily. And then second round matchup, it was a round of 32. They played Michigan State, 85-76. Then they played a Sweet 16 Texas Tech. Beat them by five, and that was a hell of a game there. And then Arkansas, the Elite Eight, who knocked out number one overall seed Gonzaga again, 78-69. Duke advanced, beating Arkansas. Arkansas had a heck of a run.
They actually had a really dominant, I remember that now, they had a really dominant win against Arkansas, which was really impressive. Because unlike Providence, who is one of the worst four seeds I've ever seen, Arkansas was a very good four seed. They were a team that had a good year. They made multiple runs with that squad. They made yet another one. You mentioned it. They legitimately beat the team that I thought was best in the country, Gonzaga. I thought Arizona was right up there too, but Gonzaga was really good top for me. And so Duke has battle tested, man. They've gone through the tournament and beat some really, really good teams. Like I said, it's kind of surprising because I don't think Duke's going to be for a good chunk of this year, especially with that really weak ACC schedule they played. So now they get North Carolina, who, ironically enough, I kind of felt the same way about them. And then they go out and they beat Baylor. And then in the Sweet 16, I can't remember who they beat in the Sweet 16, but they beat Baylor in the second round in a hell of a game. They get to win the Sweet 16, they move on, and UCLA, I think it was UCLA.
UCLA, yep.
They beat UCLA, who's a decent squad. Move on, obviously they get a break with playing St. Peter's in the Elite Eight. But hey, you don't make, it is what it is. They were off the corner. They crawled on, they go to the Final Four. I like Duke in that game, especially. I just think Duke's a better basketball team, and North Carolina was able to get that last game in Cameron Indoor, but I just don't think they're going to replicate that. So I think my prediction, Eddie, is going to be a Duke and KU championship. I really would not surprise me if Villanova beat KU. I really do think KU's vulnerable. Their schedule's been so easy, and I just wonder if Villanova will have enough firepower. They might. Wouldn't surprise me. I really feel like a toss-up to me. But for this hypothetical, I'll give it to KU. If KU makes a national championship, I think Duke would beat them. I think Duke's a better basketball team. Duke's clearly got more talent. No, it's KU, but Duke is loaded with Montreal on there, AJ with Griffin. Griffin on that squad. They've got players like Roach there too. I mean, they've got guys. And look, he's the Coach K thing. Coach K gets the national title. You really need to lose the game. I mean, come on, he's on the Stairwell Tour. If he gets to that game, really hard for me to see him losing it.
It just has that feel. To it. It just has that Cinderella go out on top feel. It just has that feeling to it.
It's like meant to be. Yeah, it kind of feels meant to be. If he gets to that game, it just kind of feels meant to be. It already kind of feels meant to be. The fact he's playing North Carolina in the Final Four. That kind of already begins to give you that meant to be feel. The first time they've ever done that, by the way. The first time Duke and North Carolina have ever played the Final Four, which is crazy. I had not realized that. That's my prediction. I'll predict Duke. I think all those teams could win it. Obviously, I would give North Carolina the least likely odds, but they also beat a one seed. So, it is what it is. And KU is the only one seed left, so you obviously have to give KU a chance. But I think KU is the most vulnerable one seed. In the tournament bracket, I know Baylor lost the second round, but I do think Baylor was a more complete team than KU. What got Baylor was the injuries. They got depleted with injuries near the end of the season, kind of threw their season off a little bit. They still got the one seed. And to be 100% honest, I don't know who would beat North Carolina that day. North Carolina played an amazing game against Baylor. Honestly, Baylor did a great job just kind of back. Either way, it could be fun. March Madness is kind of beginning to come to a close. We've only got three more games left. and for all the Madness, Eddie, we've got the most blue blood Final Four that you could think of ever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all these teams are blue bloods to that. Yeah, I would put Villanova at least, actually. It might be a surprise to you, but in my opinion, I think Villanova has the least out of the four teams. Because of the undermanned, I didn't even know prior to in that broadcast of that game with Villanova and Houston last weekend that they're undermanned. I'm like, damn, how did they get to where they are? And now they lost with one of their more best players to that Achilles. And now you're going to go up against the KU team. Yep, you mentioned it had an easy schedule. I mean, yes, you can't control who you're playing, but they had the easiest road, clearly, to the Final Four there. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Villanova could do it. If Villanova was full strength, I would change my answer in heartbeat here.
Yeah, but I'd lean towards Villanova if they were full strength.
But unfortunately, we gotta pick KU for that one, and yeah, I'm gonna pick Duke also to win the whole thing. Just has that magical ride to it. But Duke, they gotta have to take care of unfinished business though against North Carolina, like we mentioned already in this segment here of Out of Bounds. I think that Duke North Carolina game is gonna be a good one. I think that's gonna come right down in the last few minutes. Like,
agreed.
The other one happened. I think the first half of that Villanova KU game, I think it'll be competitive in the first half. But I think the depth is just going to be too much. KU put on Miami in that second half.
Yep.
Miami had no chance. So I think, unfortunately, for Jay Wright, they can prove me wrong. Let's face it, they can prove me wrong. But KU's depth, talent, and Remy Martin, I think saving. I think saving him, making Bill Self, head coach of KU, making him look like a genius right now. Saving him, he's like the Energizer Bunny right now, just too fast, too quick. So he's really stepped up scoring while Ochai Agbaji's really struggled in this NCAA tournament. So that's huge for KU. If Norman Martin don't step up. Who knows? But we'll see. But yeah, I got Duke winning the whole thing.
You know, and just to piggyback off that, Eddie, real quick, I had a feeling going into the game. By the way, K-State did just beat Northern Colorado 8-6. other and utter. So that game did just wrap up. Yep. It was a little hold on thing.
Justin. Thank goodness. Yep.
But I felt like going to the tournament, Remy Martin was going to be the X factor for KU. I really did. I felt like if they can get Remy Martin started to get going in the Big 12 tournament, and I was like, interesting. So I was like, if he builds off of this in the NCAA tournament, they can make a Final Four run. If he can't, if he doesn't, they can't. That is how I felt. And I felt like Remy Martin was going to be the X factor. I really did. And lo and behold, he has continued to build off of what he did in the Big 12 tournament, and that has gotten KU to the Final Four. I really think he is their X factor. I really do, because most of the season, Eddie, it's felt like KU is really good. There's definitely areas they're really good at, but they really feel vulnerable in certain areas too. And Remy Martin seems to cover up some of those vulnerabilities and make them feel like more of a complete team. And I feel like they would have been too exposed in the NCAA tournament if they didn't get him playing to the level that he's been playing. And I stand by that statement, because if you don't get Remy Martin doing what he did, you don't beat Creighton, and you don't get out of the first weekend. So I 100% stand by that statement. You may be Providence, you may be Miami without Remy Martin getting going, but I firmly believe that they do not get out of that first weekend with it. So I stand by that statement that, you know, I feel like Remy Martin's X factor, and they were going to go as he went, and you know, he's been good, and they've moved on. But if they did not get that from him, I don't think that they'd be here right now. So Remy Martin is the X factor, and I think he'll continue to be that X factor for them. But the way he's been playing, Eddie, since the Big 12 tournament, I don't think there's any turning him back now. Remy Martin's got so much talent; he's so good that I just kind of felt like it was going to be like a switch. Like once the switch was flipped on, it was on. Like I didn't feel like it was going to be like a an inconsistent on and off and on and off type thing. It was, once it was on, it was going to be on, and Remy Martin was going to be the Remy Martin that we saw last year at Arizona State. So, you know, I feel like the switch is on at this point, and so, you know, we'll see. We'll see how far I can carry him. We'll see if Vodge can get going too and play a little bit better. But we see some other guys step up in this place. Mitch Leif had a really big game. We've seen Christian Braun have some moments. Obviously, Remy Martin there too, and even Jalen Wilson has some moments too. So they definitely have some guys that have stepped in and placed and made some plays. But Remy Martin's definitely been that X factor that's really helped him out.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Andy Greer, Alex, Aiden, we are coming up to the end of this episode 94 of Troll Games Weekly Edition. Wrapped up in some Final Four for your talk, some Final Four talk on the podcast. As, of course, those games will be on TBS this weekend. And, of course, the National Championship game will be the following Monday, the first Monday in April. So, yeah, definitely the college basketball season coming to a close. And Alex just mentioned it. Finally, K-State gets game one of a two-game set against Northern Colorado, 8-6 when this podcast goes out. Of course, they're going to be starting their three-game series with Oklahoma State, who comes to Twin Family Stadium this weekend as a sixth-ranked team in the country. Hopefully, K-State by then can sweep this Northern Colorado team tomorrow and get some confidence going in that matchup. So, going back to what we said, what you said early on this podcast, as we wrap things up here on this edition of Triple P Weekly, as you hear Stan Storm playing in the background, yes, I think K-State's capable of getting one. They got to get at least one at home. That may change. You get swept again, then you have major problems. So,
Big problem. You're
0-6. You're even looking at an even much deeper hole. So you got to play those Texas teams. I know Creighton this follows Oklahoma State, if I remember correctly, there as well. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here, but definitely Josh Nikolaus' home run was the difference in that game there, the late to take game one, game two tomorrow when this podcast, episode 94 of Triple P Weekly, goes out. K-State will already started their three-game set with Oklahoma State. A lot covered, Alex. It feels like it's been a while since we've just been us on this podcast, but we've covered quite a bit. I know football we didn't get talked about entirely. That's going to be coming up in the upcoming episodes of the podcast. Obviously, with basketball officially coming to a close next week. College basketball, not NBA. We'll refer to that as well. But, Alex, any last thoughts?
Man, I feel like there's so much that we actually did miss with basketball because we had so much other stuff going on at the same time. But I thought we did a good job. I thought we did a good job kind of rounding all the horses here. But with everything that's gone on the last week, it's been a busy week in K-State, a lot of moving parts. You mentioned spring practice continues to roll on at the Bill Snyder Family Stadium. And recruits are in there. Jordan Nelson's in there. The team's practicing. Adrian Martinez was spotted out there today. I thought that there was some potential position changes, potential surprises of some guys that were playing. So definitely a lot going on with the football team. And you swing over to basketball team. That seems to be where most people's focus is right now, obviously. I'm really excited about the drum tank hire. You and I seem really going to dive a lot into kind of that in-between. In between, Bruce over leaving and Drum Tank coming, although we did have a really good discussion with Curtis Kelly on that, that people can go back and listen to. Definitely would encourage that if they haven't heard that.
Yep.
And then, looking around at baseball, and once again, walking on baseball team. And kind of their inconsistent play and up and down play. So, just a lot of good stuff. I guess what I'll leave people with, Eddie, is for K-State, I think that we've talked about there being a lack of kind of juice, kind of a lack of excitement around these two, around the two flagship sports at K-State here the last couple of years, football and basketball in particular. Football and basketball, those are the two flagships, football and basketball being the two flagships, I must say. And it's just, that juice hasn't been there. Like, we just haven't seen that same juice, in my opinion, in those two programs. And I feel like we're beginning to see and feel a little bit of it again.
And that's a
good thing. I think a lot of people are beginning to realize that, dang, like, that K-State football team can be pretty good. They could be pretty good. They could be a 9-10 win team if things break right. I do believe that. You know, it's way too early to tell. You know, we're still in spring ball, but I still think they'll bring some more guys in the portal after spring ball is over.
Yeah.
But the jury's still out there, but they could be good. We could be in for a really good football season. So it seems like there's some buzz around that. And obviously, Jerome Tang is bringing some buzz around the basketball program that we have not felt his energy and his juice since the Frank Martin time.
No disrespect to
Bruce and what Bruce has done, but even in Bruce Weber's Big 12 title teams, I'm not gonna say they lacked juice, but it just didn't have the same feel as some of those Frank Martin teams. And I feel like you kind of have that same feeling that you had around the Frank Martin teams right now on Jerome Tang. I think that's a good thing because this team, that program desperately needs an injection of buy-in, energy, something to get it going, to give it something. I just kind of felt stale. So we talked about it. It was something that concerned me. It was something that I was worried about, Eddie. I really was. This two programs just seem like they're beginning to kind of flatten out a little bit. I'm hoping that this is going to help with those efforts. And you know what? I'll even go a step further. Not even K-State's two flagship sports in general, but even the university. You know, the enrollment has been kind of slowly dipping the last 5+ years. K-State. K-State's kind of having control, like, you know, getting people to come to K-State and be students there. And it's kind of like I said, that enrollment, I guess it's about close to 20,000, maybe a little below 20,000. It was like $24,000 there. So, you know, they've got new president. He's been there for 3 weeks, Richard Litton. People seem to be really excited about him and what he can do. And he's talking about Chris Kleiman and Jerome Tang and what they can do for being ambassadors at the university and being able to draw up excitement, even get enrolled enough. So, you know, you hope that maybe there can be a domino effect with some excitement around these teams can even lead to kind of getting those enrollment numbers back up at K-State. So, I know that that's bigger than what we're talking about right now, but just in general, I feel like everything's been kind of flat around the university. And it feels like you're getting some energy now and some juice now around those programs, getting a little energy and juice around the university, and that the university may start to use some of those players, some of those athletes, some of those coaches that are creating the juice to try to get more students in there. So hopefully that's a good thing. But it's just nice to see it. It's nice to see that because it just seems like K-State's kind of fall a little complacent. A little complacent, a little flat in those areas. You saw the attendance. You're not just seeing the students. You're seeing attendance. I mean, that football stadium was not full. Every game this last season.
No, it was not full.
That basketball stadium was a joke.
I ain't going there. I don't have time to go there.
No. I mean, my gosh. I mean, it was horrible. And like I said, I've seen that football stadium that empty since, my gosh, this year. I've seen it as empty as it was for, last 5 to at least 10 years, like right before I went to college there, at the beginning of the Snyder era, into the Prince era. I just want full stadiums again, Eddie. I just want juice around those programs again. I want excitement. I just want that back. And I went to K-State when they were peaking, man. Basketball juice was all juiced up. Football was all juiced up. And Roland was at like an all-time high. Maybe I was just riding the wave when I went in there, but I just wanted to see some of that. Like I said, it seems like we're beginning to. Good thing. And hopefully Jerome Tang and Chris Kleiman can help out with that. But just welcome. It's a welcome sight. And just makes me happy to go on to see that. Hopefully they can continue to build off that momentum.
Yeah, and we can go on all night about that, but also add in the, this is what the Purple Project Podcast Daily Editions are for. Definitely a lot going on right now at K-State Sports outside of the Big Two. Baseball escaping tonight. K-State Women's Basketball just came to an end there. And oh, by the way, they got NCAA tournament win on their belt. You get excited about them. They're bringing back their starting five next year, and then some, and then you got recruiting as well going on for them as well. You gotta get excited about them. Tech track team doing some good things over the weekend. Texas Relays, they started their outdoor season. Rowing starting to get going. Tennis coming off of a double weekend where they won both of their matchups there as well. So volleyball, it's going to get kickstarted here with a little bit of spring schedule here this weekend as well. So definitely, the Pearl Project Podcast Daily will have you covered on the other sports as well. But yeah, we talked about the Big Two being flat. Shout out K-State Nation. Richard Linton, continue to do work, continue to promote. You heard it here first, Pearl Project Podcast Weekly. Continue to do what you're doing, President. Do what you're doing.
He is on fire in his first three weeks.
Yep, continue to do what you're doing, and yeah, and this will be talking point of more and kind of the end on a football note here. It's a little early for me still, but definitely I could definitely see Alex, this team, if the cards break out right, for this team being a big year come fall for this football team. So it's a little early for me. Yeah, with spring going on, I'm going to wait and see who they can get. I know they're going to get a couple more from the transfer portal. I want to see who they get and how their roster is going to stack up going into the summer. And obviously, we'll talk more as things get moved along for football side of stuff. But yeah, I can definitely see Chris Klieman's going to be a big year. I mean, I'm not saying
it's a huge year for Chris Klieman.
Yeah,
100% right. I think if K-State goes, let's say they go 7-5 again, just hypothetically, and Chris Klieman's going to begin to, look, I won't get a fire or anything, but that will begin to legitimately make people go, okay, like, can you take us to the next level? Because that seems pretty good. Like, that team has some talent on it. Like, it's you're right. It's gonna be a big year for him. It's biggest year, yeah. Because if he has kind of a flat year, then I think you could make an argument he may be on the hot seat the next year. So you are correct. It's a huge year for him because it could really kind of open the two ways for him. He has a really good year, and it could really just solidify him in there. And if he kind of has a bad year or down year, it could really kind of put him in the hot seat. It could really kind of split a couple ways. And that's what you get. You know, you've got one year where you're really high, and then you have another year where you're really low, and then you have a third year that's kind of in the middle. You know, that's kind of how it's going to go. But I do still believe Chris Klieman. You know, I think he's going to develop a quarterback. Outside of Tyler Thompson. That's the question. That's the golden question.
That's the big question. That's the big question.
That's the golden question.
That's the big question, and people are already asking me about that, and they have their concerns. They're talking to me about their concerns.
It is a concern. I agree.
So, yeah, we're going to leave that as a cliffhanger. Yeah, that's a perfect cliffhanger.
And honestly, Eddie, and I'm not going to go too far in football, but that is the big question mark, I think, going into this year. Quarterback life after Skylar Thompson. I feel a little better about it with Adrian Martinez, but they have not developed quarterback outside of Skylar Thompson, and that is like, oh my gosh, like, can you get a good QB play? I mean, that is going to be the thing we'll be talking about this summer when we're doing all our football previews.
Yep. Perfect ending to end episode 94 of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly Edition. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, appreciate y'all. Again, if you're not subscribed to this K-State podcast, you better get on board right now. A lot of good stuff out there, including in our archives on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Alex, we'll do it again next week.
Look forward to it, Eddie.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Purple Project Podcast. Go Cats. Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, you have been listening to the Purple Project Podcast. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Podcast. Get it wherever podcasts are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.